Good morning. You're listening to WMFO in Medford. That's WMFO Medford, otherwise known as Tufts Freeform commercial-free community-based radio. And you're about to listen to a small slice of that community-based socialist alternative radio, talk and music from a working-class democratic socialist perspective. We're here every other Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And by the way, we're also known as Tufts Educational Radio. Lots of names here. And today's show will be co-hosted by myself, Jeff, and...
Tom,
is your mic on, Tom? No, try again. No, it is on. Try again.
Tom,
yes. Technical difficulty, my fault. So welcome, listeners. If you're a regular listener to our show, welcome back. I believe we weren't here last week. I'm not sure. Maybe we were, maybe we weren't. 2 weeks ago. But we're going to be here most of the summer, all the summer, hopefully. And we have a lot to talk about. We never get to everything we want to talk about. Today's show will be focusing on the Grenfell fire. I don't know what the right word is to call that. I want to say tragedy and all those cliches, but I also want to say capitalist murder. So the Grenfell capitalist murder,
mass murder,
in Britain, where this tower, and I've stayed in one of those. I've actually stayed in tower blocks in Liverpool, kind of public housing, not the only kind in Britain, and a horrible death of over 100 to 200 people in a. You know, what we would call low-income housing or public housing here in the U.S. And it's just horrible. And then, so there's a lot of angles to that we want to talk about. And then we're going to, including the fact that Socialist Alternative is in political solidarity with Committee for Workers International, and one of the biggest sections of the Committees for Workers International is the British Socialist Party, or called the Socialist Party of England and Wales. And we are helping to organize demonstrations and other fight back there. Also, if you happen to be on Facebook and there's just been some heart-wrenching YouTube videos, we were talking about this off-air before the show, where I don't know why they're so good, but they're just like exceptional quality from a lot of things that you see. And residents or people that live in the area, working-class people from the area, just pouring their hearts out at what happened. Mostly people of color seem to be living in that tower block, and so there's a lot of... it's bringing up a lot of talk about racism, a lot of talk about working class people just don't matter, a lot of talk against austerity measures. In fact, there was a left-wing labor councillor just elected in that area as a result of chronic housing problems that predate the fire. We'll also be talking about the Massachusetts millionaire's tax. This is a tax happening in Massachusetts where the show emanates from. We emanate from... In case you're listening online, go to WMFO.org to listen online if you don't get the signal, the live signal going out over here in Somerville, Medford, parts of Greater Boston, Massachusetts. We also do broadcast via the internet internationally, and we have had some feedback from our international listeners. Go to Socialist Alternative on Facebook. We appreciate your feedback and so on. So, that Massachusetts tax is important for Massachusetts, but it's also something that's happening around the U.S. and around Britain. I feel, even with the election of Trump, I feel a lot of people, this is anecdotal, but I just feel there's some kind of mood in society. In the United States, it might crystallize around the attacks on healthcare, the attacks on the flawed but still important Obamacare, as it's called here, the ACA. What's that stand for again? I always forget.
American Healthcare Access Act, I think.
I forgot. Anyway, I should know that.
That sounded good.
Sometimes
though.
I get it right. Sometimes I don't. And then we also are going to talk about similar sort of millionaire taxes and sort of being fed up with austerity, not just in Britain, or in the fire has crystallized that, the fire at Grenfell, but also here, the attacks on healthcare, which the Republicans are preparing a second round, has crystallized around that and other things. So I get this feeling
public
that sort
education.
Of a popular mood against actually austerity, even as Trump, the Trump administration tries to sort of shock and awe of many front attack on everything associated with humanity, basically, in human life, whether it's nature. Getting rid of designations of conservation lands and natural parks and so on, or it's attacks straight up on planned attacks on food stamps and health care and everything else. So again, welcome to the show. And we're going to start off a little differently than, well, actually, Tom, maybe you could start our discussion on Grenfell a little bit. I'm going to do a little technical thing here.
First of all, this is a tragedy of epic scale and loss of life of the most vulnerable people trapped in what really amounted to an enormous death trap known as Grenville Tower. It's a tower block. It's public subsidized housing, council housing, meaning in the UK and Britain, the government is transmitted, government action is transmitted through local councils that are made up of elected reps from the whoever won the election, Tories or Labour or Liberal Democrats or some of the fringe parties there on the right, like UKIP. That's a little bit off point, I guess, except that this is a Tory council that ran the area, Kensington Marlborough area. It's part of the Chelsea region of London. It turns out it's where class warfare is most in your face because of the extreme poverty right next door to extreme luxury wealth. And these council towers are considered eyesores in the sensitive eyes of the filthy rich who live in the area. The most expensive blocks, the most expensive street in London is in this region. And yet it's cheek by jowl to a very large, diverse, impoverished, struggling, socially active community action population that has been complaining about this tower, Grenfell Tower, for years to the deaf ears of the council. And this is makes the tragedy even more hair-raising because it was a completely preventable tragedy. It was an apartment, a small apartment fire that quickly spread throughout the multiple stories, I think maybe 15 or 20 stories, I'm not sure, of the building, because the rich neighbors, the filthy rich, were complaining that it was an eyesore when they looked out their multi-million pound condos. So they schemed with the council to put what they called a refurbishment, meaning like kind of like a cosmetic, like putting a Band-Aid on a situation that required a surgery. So they put this building material, they call it cladding, on this building. And it's not the only tower block of council housing that in that area, but it's the most egregious, quote-unquote, eyesore to the filthy rich. So they put this cladding on the building. And during the course of this horrendous, horrific disaster, fire disaster, that happened so quickly that 100, maybe 100, 150, 200 people are the victims of it. And also the council and the council subcontractors have been hiding out from the public, who are enraged, and their rage and fury deserves to grow. So this cladding that was put up in order to, for cost savings of £2 per meter, square meter of insulation, they put insulation that was not fire proof. It's a flammable insulation, and it acted like a giant torch that just immediately lit up from bottom to top. So this was amounted to £5,000 in the case of Grenfell Towers, which is not really a lot of money when the average real estate price on Victoria Avenue in that same region is £8 million per home. So the public is very, very right to rise up in fury against this, the working class. This is mass murder of the working class. It was as if the council had just set the torch itself.
Yeah, I think a lot of people have had the similar thoughts that, you know, it just shows working class lives are not valued under capitalism. There's so many tragedies that popped into mind. For everything from the Triangle Shirtwaist Fire, remember that one in New York, and the women textile workers locked into factories, and a recent one in Bangladesh in more recent years where the same thing happened. You mentioned one in Britain you could remember just from the past, the coal.
Yeah, there was a great disaster in coal country in Wales, I believe it was, back in the 60s, early 60s, I think. When a coal tip, that's a place where coal slag from the mining operations is heaped up into what amounts to a very precarious mountain of coal waste. They call it a coal tip, and it's associated with mines. They're throughout regions of Wales. So for years, it was screamed to the local authorities and then to the Westminster, the government, and the Parliament, that this coal tip was unsteady, and it was getting more and more unsteady the more they heaped up coal waste. That fell on deaf ears, and that the terrible fact was that there was a school at the base of this coal heap, and there never should have been anything like that there. But instead, amazingly, there was a school with maybe 150, 200, I'm not sure the exact number, but an entire school's worth of children and their teachers and their school workers who were buried in an avalanche of this coal tip. And it happened within minutes. There was no way to escape. And this was something that had been really predicted in detail for years. But it fell on deaf ears because it was not to any rich capitalist's interest to put money into the huge cleanup of that and change, maybe moving the school.
Yeah. By the way, getting back to Grenfell, Justice, as I mentioned earlier, the Socialist Party, formerly known as Militant in Britain, is a fairly large group by left standards, has had members elected to parliament, members elected to city councils, and so on. And it is part of the Committee for Workers International. Here in the United States, Socialist Alternative is in political solidarity with the Committee for Workers International. And what the Socialist Party in Britain is putting forward is, I'm looking right at a leaflet here that Tom got off the internet, justice for Grenfell. No justice, no peace, no safety, no rent. No one should have to pay to live. No one should pay to live in a tower block without knowing it is safe. Organized collective working class defense of our homes and our lives. And then this is, you know, sort of British, you know, friends from Britain. So I could only guess at what this means. But your contract, I guess that would be a housing contract, means you have a right to save housing and fire checks, organized to make your landlord fulfill your rights.
So lease,
they, maybe so they've, lease. Well, they've, I know that they privatized, going back to the Thatcher regime, privatized public housing. So it sounds to me like a lot of, and I think I heard this on one of those videos that we were talking about that were so good by people that lived in or near the fire, the tower block that was that where the fire happened, that said, they think they said things like, you can't outsource everything, you can't privatize everything, because the housing has gone through such outsourcing and privatization that you have private companies doing renovations, you have private companies apparently involved in all aspects of this, including I've heard calls for the landlord, quote unquote, which means that there's a private landlord running public housing. So I don't know all the details here, but you can see, you can infer them from this leaflet. Call a mass meeting of tenants on your estate. Estate is the British word for a public housing place. Could be more than one building. A downloadable leaflet is available at socialistparty.org.uk. Knock every door. Message all your friends and neighbors. It's summer. so they can be open air at the bottom of your block, you know, some sort of meeting. Try to include everyone to give yourself some time, but start now. If you don't have a tenants and residents association, set one up. If you do, sign everyone up to it. You will need contact details. Sign up everyone in a tower who is willing to participate in a withholding of rent. Should there be any delay, with adequate safety measures and a separate list of everyone who is willing to back them up. Print off the window bills. These are posters. Also available at www.socialistparty.org.uk. Organize teams to go around local streets asking people to sign up as supporters should any action be taken against tower tenants defending their right to safety. Get in touch with the Socialist Party if you want to discuss how to go about any of this. John McDonnell, Jeremy Corbyn's shadow counselor, by the way, who seems to be a socialist, a real socialist, McDonnell and Corbyn, has called for a million on the streets to get May, that's the name of the current Prime Minister of Britain, Theresa May, and the Tories out of office. Let's organize for a mass block of tenants on the July 1st demo. And that last point is important. I've heard through the grapevine and also here in this leaflet, read in this leaflet, that there's supposed to be a mass demo in Britain on July 1st. And like with everything else, even with a tragedy or a murder of this collective murder by capitalism of these working class people in the tower block, even with such a horrendous thing, you know, the pressures of daily life and, of course, the corporate media can take even the most egregious, most horrible act and try to bury it. And I've already seen, you know, there have been brilliant protests in Britain, in London, against this already. But I've also seen activists saying, oh, I feel the momentum slipping a little bit. We have to do this or that to keep the momentum up. And it's sad, but it's true. I mean, people are, working class people are not widely organized right now. And they're not they're not activists, you know. They're not used to it. And and there's a paucity of leadership, of radical left-wing leadership. So even something like this can fall by the wayside. And that's exactly what, of course, the media wants, the corporate media and the ruling class. And they're trying their best to divert it. One of the best videos I saw was a guy who said, why wasn't there a moment of silence for this? You had one for the recent terrorist attacks. Why not for this? And, now there is one. Now there is one, I know. But that just happened within the last 24 hours.
The Prime Minister made this token visit. You know,
to firefighters, not to firefighters not to the victims.
And would not talk to any of the victims'
families. Yeah,
and the next time she did show up, in the interval, Jeremy Corbyn, the head of the Labour Party, and hopefully the next Prime Minister of England, he did come. He spoke with many of the residents. He expressed his sadness, sincere condolences. So the next time,
well, Corbyn also said, sorry to interrupt. But you know, I don't know where this information comes from, but it's pretty widely known in Britain, apparently, that because in this rich area that you described, Tom, there's a lot of big empty houses.
That's right.
I don't know if it's from real estate speculation or they're off in there. They're off in there, the Bahamas or something, or wherever the rich go these days. And so Corbyn just said openly, these houses should be occupied by, they should be given to victims and their families, because there's hundreds of people homeless now. I think it's 600
or something. I got a pretty big echo.
Yeah. Sorry, go on with what you can say, if you can remember. I didn't mean to interrupt. Yeah.
Well, no, I was just going to say that the next time that Theresa May showed up, because she was being shamed so badly for her behavior, the first time she went, second time she went, she got chased into a church, sanctuary.
Ironically.
Sanctuary. Yeah. And then when she came out under heavy security and dashed into her car and drove out of the area, it was to cries of coward and don't come back and murderer.
Yeah, there was also a huge protest. And it looked like it was very working class. Like, it looked like it included people right from that tower block on the local government offices. And they were rattling the doors. They got in. They were going up the stairs. You know, I felt personally like that's the time, because of something like this, where you just have to let go, like all the pacifist crap and everything that we're fed about nonviolence and so on in such a violent system. That's where we have to really let it go and get and really corner those people that are responsible. I'm not saying, you know, physically attack them. I'm just saying, like, you know, don't let cops stand in the way of a confrontation. And you know, if necessary, occupy the building, keep them inside, have negotiations under duress with them. You know what I mean? That kind of tactic. It's happened in France before, where they've made bosses stay inside.
Yeah, it's happened
negotiate.
In other places. Yeah, I think it's happened in China.
But I saw the cops sort of like getting overwhelmed, and I was like, it's about time. That's got to happen more and more. And then I saw a little more of the video, and it seemed like they had the thing under control. And I'm sick of that. You know, I'm sick of the cops being this obviously this is so obvious, but you know, just you know, a personal security firm for the rich. It's like I've told this story on the air before. When I went on strike, when I was working in factories in upstate New York, and it's a big General Foods plant in Albany. When I went on strike, I was so puzzled by how at midnight there was a, you know, ton of cops in this industrial park in the middle of these hills out in, you know, above Albany, in the middle of nowhere, really. How so many cops would show up, because, you know, we went out at 11 p.m. We walked out of the factory at 11 p.m. And we were getting our picketing assignments and stuff in the parking lot. And all of a sudden I see all these cops. I'm like, gee, what are they doing here, you know, in Albany? You know, all right, there's nothing happening down in the city at midnight. You know, and then the next day, another round of cops, you know, who's calling, who's on the phone saying show up at midnight, you know, like that, to make sure, what, you know, we didn't want to be in the plant. That was our tactic, was not to occupy. Our tactic was just to picket. So, and then who calls the cops the next day to escort the scabs in? And then, well, not the next day, but a few days later, a couple days later, to escort the scabs in. All these are just like phone calls from the ruling class. Or another example in Somerville. I don't know if you were with me at this time, Tom, but we, it might have been before your time, believe it or not, because you're a veteran of the socialist struggle. But we were getting signatures on, I can't remember what it was, but we had the actual paper that said you're allowed to get signatures in front of...
Is it the supermarket?
Yeah. Were you there?
No. I was there on one occasion, but I think this was another occasion.
This was another occasion. Johnny's Food Disaster.
Johnny's Food Master.
In Teal Disaster. Square. Johnny's Food Disaster in Teal Square. They got bought up by Whole Foods or whatever. This is back in the 90s. We had every right to be there. We're getting signatures for, I can't remember
it
what.
It was for LPA, wasn't it?
Healthcare for all. Yeah, to get a ballot initiative going in Somerville.
Labor Party advocates.
Yeah, which we did, by the way. We got enough signatures. And we had the paper with us that's quoted the law in the Massachusetts, whatever you call the law, Massachusetts law, legal, blah, blah, saying we had a right to be there. So about 10 minutes after we're there, cops show up. Well, who called the cops? Obviously, it was some manager in Johnny's Food Disaster, which was an odious little operation, by the way. And then these are rank and file cops.
It's a good word, and odious.
odoriferous as well. So we showed the cops the law, and they actually read it and left. And we're like, well, that's what should have happened. Why'd they show up at all? Boom, boom, boom. We're back to more collecting signatures, and it was going well, and we stayed there about half an hour. We were still going to stay longer, but one cop shows up on a motorcycle. Have you noticed the recent, by the way, kind of link between motorcycle gangs and cops? There's kind of a cross-fertilization there, which makes perfect sense to me, because cops are thugs and motorcycle gangs are thugs.
Let's leave out cops on bicycles. There's a lot more of them, too.
That seems more benign to me in some ways, but maybe not. So anyway, so this one cop shows up, a captain in Somerville shows up. I forget his name. And he goes, quote, I don't care what the law says. You're all going to be arrested and thrown in jail if you don't leave immediately. So here's this one captain reinterpreting the law. He doesn't understand who he works for. Threatening, basically, and we had young kids there, too. You know, we had, like, you know, young activists. And we'd got a lot of signatures. I didn't want to go to jail. They didn't want to go to jail. They were scared. So we did retreat, you know, and I was incensed. I went downtown. We had an office downtown. Remember that little office we had in downtown Crossing? We went downtown. Now I said, we have to get after these people, blah, blah. The organizer, Ed Bruno, was basically of Labor Party at that time. And he was also a UE, United Electrical Workers organizer. He said, well, with our limited resources to create a case out of this, takes away from our signature gathering and so on for the ballot initiative. And he was right. and we decided to not pursue it, really. That's the thing with a lot of leftists, individual or socialists or whatever. Individually, a cop or someone tramples your rights, and you don't just don't have the power or the money to fight it. And it even happens to organizations. You have to choose your battles, you know? And you know, not every, you know, I wish we had the resources to every time. If this, I'd be rich by now from court cases if every time we got our rights taken away, we were able to sue. The one victory, one of the few victories I'm aware of, is there was some members of Social Alternative that got arrested in Washington, D.C. for an anti-war protest in the mid-2000s. And it took a long time. I think it took like 5, 6 or more years.
The same happened in New York City during Occupy, didn't it?
Oh, a lot happened in New York. But this example I'm giving was they did what they often do now. They kettled an entire protest.
Right.
And anyone caught in that part of the street, whether they were part of the protest or not, was hauled off to prison in Washington, D.C. They were protesters were threatened to be put in a part of the prison where they would be raped. There was just all this like intimidation and fear mongering. And so the protesters copped to a plea, but they went ahead and sued as a group, a class action suit against what happened. And they won. It took a long, long time, and they won, and they got money, actual money. People that I know in Social Alternative donated the money back to the cause. But anyway, that was
the New York
just
case
horrible.
Won, too, but yeah. it took years.
Well, I remember the kettling. I went to an anti-war protest in New York back in the mid-2000s, I think it was. And so for my first personal experience with the kettling thing, K-E-T-T-L-I-N-G, I think that's how you spell it, where they... they had enough cops. New York has way too many cops, by the way. There's just like way too many cops in New York, and they have adopted this thing, which I think existed before off and on, but they've adopted it like uniformly now. I think that for big demonstrations, they will section off the demonstration to destroy its unity. In other words, you'll go to a block and there'll be a police barrier, not just on both ends of the street, but on the sidewalk as well. So you have like a square of cops, like an old British war formation from the 1800s. And what that does is it cuts off that section of the march from the other section of the march, and the cops can decide whether to let you go or not. But once you leave that area, they don't let you back in. So it also deletes the march numerically. You end up with a lot of people on the sidewalks. Don't look whether in New York, you can't tell whether they're part of a march or not because there's so many people on the sidewalks. And, you know, my memory of it was I left the kettled area because the cops were going nuts on people. And I didn't want to get killed or hurt. So I left the kettled area with a couple other people in Social Alternative to try to find another area to protest, another area to go to. And I never found another area. The whole thing was kettled up. So they do stuff like
that.
Well,
now they're criminalizing or attempting to criminalize protest altogether.
Yeah, that's right. Anyway, let's go back to Grenfell. Grenfell is the name of the tower block
that was burnt, where
this fire happened in a place. Well, I want to bring up some of the. Maybe you were just about to say. Sorry, go ahead. What were you saying?
I was going to bring up the fact that another source of righteous rage right now is that there was a bill that Labor put up a year or so ago. And it was to guarantee that all of the tower blocks in the city would be made fireproof, sprinkler systems, fire, all sorts of ways to get out of buildings. And a lot of these buildings, there's no way you can get out of them. This building, by the way, Grenfell Tower, only had one stairwell.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing I was going to get into. You mentioned that. You mentioned already the flammable materials, which I think the corporate media even has talked about. So this place was refurbished to make it look nicer for the rich neighborhood. And a lot of it was shrinking the size of the apartments to cram more people in. So that's a fire hazard right there. Creating this outer coating that you described, Tom, that was flammable. Did you tell the story on air about the difference in price between the flammable and non-flammable?
It was £2
Did you
per
say that?
Meter.
Yeah. And then there
they saved a grand total of 5,000 pounds on the cladding that burnt up 100 or 150 or maybe even 200 people.
And then there's the thing you mentioned about no fire escapes, only one stairway, which is insane. On top of that, as you might have heard in the corporate media, I've heard a little bit about this, no fire extinguishers, no sprinklers. Actually, I didn't hear that from the corporate media, no fire extinguishers. But anyway, no sprinklers, no sprinkling system.
If you had, there were fire extinguishers, but you bought them. No one provided.
No, that's what I mean. There were no fire extinguishers like in the hallways. No sprinkler system. And what was the other thing that was really bad? Well, here's one other thing. There's
you can imagine
things.
The electrical and the plumbing, even if there had been a sprinkler system, you know.
Well, they were told also to stay in the building, like insanely, like, don't worry, just stay in the building. And people took that for real, you know, took that advice, and it killed them. Other people managed to escape. Here's someone named Lindsay German, who's an activist, a socialist in Britain, talking about the murder, tragedy, etc. Let's see. The council is so rich, like Tom, you mentioned, Kensington and Chelsea, they could buy, it has £330 million in reserves. It could buy a flat, meaning an apartment, for each of the homeless from Grenfell right now. Or force developers to allow people to live in these empty flats, which are a scar across inner London. We mentioned that as well. Real estate is so expensive, it becomes a commodity where where people use it to speculate, and there's a lot of empty, rich places. I also saw a statistic I don't have memorized, but home ownership in England as a whole is extremely low right now because of the inflation in real estate prices. And that's certainly, I think, in evidence.
Can they still have the bedroom tax, don't they?
I don't know. I don't know about that.
I think there's still a bedroom tax where if you have a bedroom that in your condo or your flat or your home that's not being used, you're now being subjected to this absurd tax for an unused place to sleep.
Yeah, well,
that's been a long...
That sounds like it would be good in a way, but I'm sure the rich can absorb the tax, whereas the working class cannot.
That's basically, it's put a lot of people out of their homes.
Yeah. So 100 to 150 dead, 74 injured at least. More details will come. There's been a history of problems with maintenance of this tower block. There was a residence group, Glenfell Action Group, repeatedly warned the owners. Let's see.
And this housing bill I mentioned that was put up by the Labour Party to address the safety concerns of all the residents of this area and all over Britain, I think, was voted down by the Tory majority, and they've been publishing the names and the pictures and social media of those Tories who voted against it. And the final thing I was going to mention was that the heroes, as usual, were the firefighters. And over the last couple, 2-3 years, there's been this concerted attack by the Tory government, the conservative, reactionary right-wingers that run the government, to reduce cost, you know, austerity, they call it, by attacking all manner of benefits, but also all manner of public safety now, public education and public safety and public health, by selling off the National Health Service. That's the, you know, the way that the people of Britain for 50-60 years now practically have been able to get health care without being bankrupted like they are in the United States if they're sick.
Right.
So, but the fire departments were closed.
I actually have in front of me the stats on that. Number of firefighters has been cut in London by 550. 10 stations closed. Other services reduced. Whereas the number of fire deaths has risen over that time. And then they mentioned the NHS here. Like you're connecting the two. Yeah, basically social services under attack because the rich can afford all the private services and the poor can't. It's just like here. In many ways, and there will be, unfortunately, more tragedies showing how little working class people mean to the system as individuals and as small groups. Actually, working class people run the system and keep the system running through our labor, but that's hidden. There's another thing here that I wanted to look at. Maybe just for time, I'll not mention it, but let's see. Yeah. Okay. So anyway, what else should we say about this before we move on? There is a fight back. There is a rally. There have been wonderful rallies from what I can see where people are expressing their righteous anger, and I wish they would express even more. There is a big rally happening on July 1st, and I believe that rally is being asked, that that demonstration is being asked to go throughout England, throughout Europe, around the world. So maybe we'll even do solidarity demos here in the United States. I know most, with the way that the corporate media is, the way the education system is in this country, there are hundreds of millions of people that have probably no knowledge of what's happened.
Well, it was
pushed off the front page by
the shooting in Washington, D.C. Yeah.
How many people follow anything about what's happening in other countries in this country? You have a population with, and I'm not blaming people for this, it's the way it's based on inequality and so on, and based on capitalist exploitation. But we have a very low number of people that actually even have a passport in this country. It was like, I was shocked when I saw the statistic a couple of years ago, 26% or something. It was so low. It was unbelievable.
I confess mine lapsed, but I don't have the money to go anyplace.
There you go. And also, I don't know. I just don't hear people talking about international things very much. And when I raise things about things happening internationally with certain people in certain situations, I get a blank stare. They just have no idea what I'm talking
about.
Well,
if your kid's in the Army infantry, or
yeah, you learn a little then, right?
You learn something then.
Well, we should probably talk more about Grenfell. But the again, check out I would say socialistworld.net, which is the website of the Committee for Works International, for more information on what happened, on what's being organized against what happened, and against and to prevent this type of thing from happening in the future. I think it's pretty unfortunately obvious that this will happen again. And it takes, one thing that occurred to me emotionally when I heard about this is it takes this kind of sacrifice of working class lives, unfortunately, for anything to happen. It's like the worst injustices and cuts in social services and other things can happen to working class people. It's like we have to sacrifice our lives to make an impact. And it shouldn't come to that. There's supposed to be a political system, right? It's supposed to be quote-unquote democracy where you can say things and do things and organize. But they limit that so much. Like we were just talking about what happened with the anti-war protests in the mid-2000s. They limit that so much.
Or just petitioning, signature petitioning.
They ignore that shit
public,
all the time. They ignore that stuff
venue.
All the time. They ignore that stuff all the time. So it's just a question of really, I only see worry in the face of the ruling class when there's mass deaths. Like, I can palpably feel the worry of the ruling class.
They're afraid of speaking of torches,
they're afraid of
the torches and the pitchforks.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was going to say. That's exactly right. They're afraid that people, no matter how ignorant they are about politics and made that way, no matter how much propaganda is out there to defer them and to divert them from their righteous anger, it just strikes home. You know, it just hits you viscerally. And the propaganda melts away. All of a sudden, it doesn't match reality. That's the thing about, and here in America, at least, it's probably true in other capitalist countries, there's a whole cottage industry of left-wing media critique, which some of it's very quite useful. I mean, Noam Chomsky, for example, a lot of his work is about that. Some of it's quite useful. But I also notice people that get so torn up in that that's all they do is critique over and over again the corporate media. Or B, these are not mutually exclusive, they throw up their hands and say, there's no way we can overcome this level of brainwashing. People are just too brainwashed. And I disagree on both counts. I don't think you should spend all your time critiquing the obvious, although at times you have to. And also, I don't think people are brainwashed. I think a lot less people are brainwashed by the corporate media than some progressives and leftists think. And then also, it's not their fault, but then also, I just want to get that last point in. Also, there's a point where, a tipping point that I tried to describe a minute ago, where the propaganda just so doesn't match the reality that people just kind of don't care what the media is saying, you know? And the media itself is all over itself right now because they're right-wingers saying that. There's right-wingers saying, exhorting the corporate media for their own reasons, which I don't agree with, we don't agree with. But that worries the corporate media drastically. It really, and so you listen to like National Propaganda Radio now. They're making the reporters into heroes. Today I heard the legendary, what was her name? Somebody Slamberg or something. I forgot. What is her name?
Susan Stamberg.
Yeah, Susan's the legendary Susan Stamberg. She's not legendary. These are mouthpieces for capital. These are capitalist puppets in the national propaganda radio. They're not legendary. They're to be in a really democratic society, democratic social society. These would be people that would just be pitied. They'd just be like, I'm sorry you wasted your life as a mouthpiece for capital. I feel bad for you. Why don't you go putter in your garden now because you're completely irrelevant. Sorry, go ahead.
I'll try to
getting very excited about this.
I'll try to retrieve what I was going to say. You go ahead.
No, I just was going to go. I was going to the tax thing, which I'm also going to get angry about, by the way. Anger brings justice. Don't let the pacifists fool you.
Well, the fact that the networks were always the corporate networks, their response to the allegations that it's all fake news always managed to put at least two reactionaries on every panel so that they can be seen as fair and balanced.
The strategy's working very well for the Trumpites, you know, because they get more media exposure now out of the liberal
guilt of the
NPR types. Yeah, oh, you accused us of this? Well, we'll put on your most reactionary idiot. Anyway, we could go on about the corporate media, and that includes
the left-wing critics. It's not just in the corporate, but there's a lot of left-wing criticism that always seems to just go round and round. I'm sorry to say this, but you see this in environmental. We had an enormous climate defense march in New York City three years ago.
More recently than that, I believe.
Two years ago, the biggest march in American history.
That was last year, but I could be wrong.
And yet, what's anytime you say, well, what's the next step? The next step is for somebody somewhere out of the blue to call another demo. And those demos are
The next step is call your congressman by people like Bill McKibben.
Well, that's
really put pressure on those Democrats.
That's what Chomsky says. So I guess it's a full circle. You've done all you need.
Yeah. Well, but you're bringing up a good point. And I would just add that with National Propaganda Radio, I shared this thing on Facebook I got from you or somebody that said that they're going to give 3 hours to a special devoted to DeVos and her right-wing ideas about education. Now, that didn't surprise me. You know why? Because as a sad regular listener to National Propaganda Radio, they've had many stories extolling the virtues from their point of view, from the ruling class point of view, of privatization of education, of charter schools, and so on. They loved that question 4 in Massachusetts last year that went down 64%. The people spoke once again. Yeah. I love that. That's like what I mean. Yeah. That's where the propaganda didn't match reality anymore. People know the schools are underfunded. They see the schools being closed in Boston.
They see the fees
get all the liberals, all the liberal Democrats came out. Jim and Marjorie on NPR and those idiots. Jim Browdy, what a scumbag. Margie, whatever her name is, what a scumbag. Mouthpieces for capital. They came out for the charter schools, blah, 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 you know? And the people spoke and said, screw you. We know that you're taking money from us, from our tax money, giving it to these rich bastards that run the charter schools. Screw you. There'll be none of that. 64% voted to keep the cap on charter schools. Not enough. We got to get rid of charter schools. We got to get rid of charter schools. But anyway, let's move on to something related. Proposed Masters and Millionaires tax question heading to the 2018 ballot. Now, why, you ask, when we are regularly showing you how bad the Democrats are, how tied they are to corporate money, how much they shill for the capitalists, how much they are capitalists themselves, the Democratic Party politicians in many cases, why would they vote 134-55, so that means a bunch of Democrats voted against it as well. But anyway, for a millionaire tax on the customer, well, the reason is it's such a little thing. Listen to this. Individuals with annual incomes above $1 million will be subject to a 4% surtax. By the way, what the heck does surtax mean? S-U-R-T-A-X.
Just topped on top of whatever you were going to pay?
Sur.
4% of what you had to pay?
An, that's a French. Sur. An, okay. The surtax would only apply to portions of income over $1 million. Now, there you go. Start reading carefully. Portions of income over $1 million. The current income tax rate is 5.1%. So that's going to bring them up to a whopping 9%, whereas in the 50s, they were paying 90% or more on their personal income federally.
And the Republicans were extolling it like Eisenhower.
Yeah. But just this little bit, and this could be as few as 20,000 people in the state, about 0.02% or something I read, or 0.2% or something like that. This will this will only raise about $1.9 billion. But you know, they claim they're going to use it for education. We'll see, for public transportation and for infrastructure. You know, and we'll see. But anyway, this is why the Democrats can do this, because there's only 20,000 people out there. You know, usually the people that tell them what to do actually, and they can get away with this now. Where how far it goes, how many qualifiers are added to it, how many amendments it ends up with, watch carefully. But it's virtually nothing, and the millionaires. In Massachusetts, realized that the tide is against them. In fact, this is what I was saying earlier in the show. That
Jeff, is this a ballot initiative?
Ballot initiative supported by labor and unions and other progressive organizations that took a couple years to get rolling. But listen to this. Support for raising taxes on Massachusetts millionaires reached 77% in a new poll. Now, the media will work on this probably and get that down a little bit. But... the fact that it's not 99% is scary, but really, count me in.
The rest of it are people who believe in trickle down.
So I just you know, the rich will not. This will not bother them at all. Really, they don't like the precedent being set. So it could become a fight. Baker isn't for it. The Republican governor of Massachusetts. Let's see. Let's see. To pay a little more, Seti Warren. Yeah, pay a little more. yeah. Anyway,
who said that?
This guy's gonna no Seti Warren. He's gonna run. He's from the Newton mayor or whatever. He's gonna run for governor. So anyway, we have this possible in November, probable millionaire tax on the ballot. We'll see what it looks like. And it's really not that much, but it sort of reverses the tide a little bit, momentarily at least, of letting these people get away with no taxes, practically, or very, 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 very little taxes. And that's what I meant earlier. This is even in the midst of Trumpism, because Trump kind of shows, and this has been obvious for a lot of people, especially socialists, but Trump shows, I think, to a new layer of people, younger people, people that weren't political, the naked face of capitalism in the Oval Office. He doesn't hide it like Obama. You know, you had to go out and read Obama's books to hear him extol capitalism and say what a great guy Reagan was. You know, he didn't talk about that very much.
Reagan. Oh, Trump, let us all bow down.
Trump. Oh, God, don't get me started. But Trump is obviously more the open face of capitalism. And so, frankly, that pisses people off. It's not with the media. It does shift things to the right in terms of the corporate media, in terms of what the Democrats think, and so on, most of the Democrats. But it doesn't mean the people are buying it. You know, it's like when the Republicans went back for their town hall meetings, quote unquote, where they wanted to lecture the population about what they were doing and shore up their base, and people started yelling at them about the tax on health care. Remember those?
Yes.
I like that.
Yes.
I like that
yes.
a lot. Now there's a lot of people, I think, waking up to the unfairness of the whole austerity, whole tax, however they phrase it. Most people don't use the word austerity, but you know what I mean. Like the rich getting away with murder, taxes are too
corporate
high.
Welfare.
You know, I mean, if I can be a measure of a certain layer of the population, I can't handle any more taxes. You know, like people have this idea that progressives. Well, I agree with it in terms of liberals. Liberals don't have a problem with taxes because a lot of liberals are upper middle class. But real, like you know, socialists. Don't like newsflash people. We don't like taxes on workers. We want to tax the 1%. We want to tax the corporate profits. We don't want to tax working people anymore. In fact, we want to lower taxes on working people. Please understand that. So I feel like as a worker, my taxes are way too high. I can't afford any more taxes. I want lower taxes. We're talking
and then
here
there's
about,
always sales tax and fees
of course,
and
everything.
All
yeah,
sorts of
everything's
hidden
going
fees.
Up food's going
if you
up
go to the, if you want to go to the park or the beach
yeah
pay for the pay to park.
Oh yeah, and where I live, they raised that that parking thing for the a little pond slash lake to $50. What? You know? Then you've got like food. I mean, I don't know. My family were currently arguing about the price of food from the freaking market basket. You know, and which is supposed to be the cheapest place. We're sitting there. This is so expensive.
And
this
most worker friendly. You know?
Oh, yeah. Let's get Diego on talking about that. Anyways, out in Seattle, the socialist alternative councilwoman Shama Sawant, K-S-H-A-M-A-S-A-W-A-N-T, has introduced legislation for a Seattle income tax. Yay. This is from the corporate media, actually, Curo 7 News, June 12th. After weeks of leaders talking about a Seattle income tax proposal, socialist city councilwoman Shama Sawant introduced legislation for it on Monday. I just love it. I know why I'm laughing, because I picture myself in a corporate board meeting and Shama's name somehow comes up and like the invective just starts flying. And I would just love to be in that room like serving them drinks or something and just laughing my ass off and then oopsing a nice cold water on one of their heads and walking away.
Have another piece of fugu
fish. Have some more sushi. Boom. Let's see. According to a report... Seattle has the most regressive state and local income tax system in the country. And this is a city that's very, housing costs are out the roof. It's really hard to live there. Regressive tax means the rate goes down as personal incomes go higher. Wow, that makes a lot of sense. Lower income earners pay higher tax rates than the highest earners. That's how the whole tax system is in this country. The new income tax proposal seeks to make the tax system more progressive by shifting more of the tax burden to the wealthy. Wow, what a
Speaking
surprise.
Speaking of housing, all across the country, the figures are in that no working class people now can even afford two-bedroom
apartments. No one on minimum wage, not one state. Even the poorest state. Go to Mississippi. Even on minimum wage in Mississippi, you can't afford an apartment. Sawant introduced, the comeback from conservatives who tend to be rather dense will be, well, how do people live then? How do they find apartments? Well, they triple and quadruple up. They live dormitory style. They live with their parents if their parents have a
they
place.
Live in their car.
Or they're homeless. They live in their car. I mean, you know, you don't. I mean, wake up, God! I'm so sick of the American propensity to. I'll give you another anecdote here, and this is going to be sound cruel because I'm going to be attacking a cancer patient. This is like a new low for me. All right, here's a woman that's recovering from cancer. And I feel bad for her because she had to do the typical American thing now of doing GoFundMe, or one of her neighbors did a GoFundMe so she could afford. And she was really good about explaining some of the things she had to deal with. She said, it's not just I have insurance, she said. It covers a lot of my treatment, but there's parts it doesn't cover. Plus, I need childcare expenses. I have young children. Plus, I need travel expenses. She did a good job of mapping out some of the costs that nobody, the rich don't think of. That they can, you know,
they have people that for that.
Yeah, that for other people is a make or break situation. You know, a lot of things I don't do because the car might not make it, because childcare is not lined up, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so, but then they asked her a good question. Actually, I was shocked. The NPR person was like, well, what do you think? And it's, of course, begging the question and should have been stated rather than asking the question. But the NPR droid is like, well, what does this make you? How does this make you feel? You know how they talk. How does this make you feel? What do you think? Mindfulness about the how it is for other people. What do you think should happen? You know, this is like begging single payer, right? Or national health.
You're schizophrenic, but you need mindfulness.
So what does she do? She keeps it on her individual thing, and says, "I think that other people have to do GoFundMe." Well, no kidding. We know that. We wanted you to say, I'm for single payer. We need universal health care. We need improved Medicare for all. Say something that takes you out of the realm of your own personal experience. Too many people are brainwashed under capitalism, especially here in America, the belly of the beast, to think of everything as personal survival strategies. But that doesn't help you, and it doesn't help us. Think of your personal thing, but put it in the context of everyone. You know what I mean? The fact that, you know, I use this metaphor a lot, or an example a lot, but the fact that you bring your lunch to work every day and save, you know, $30 a week or something doesn't mean that that's going to help you when things really go bad and your insurance doesn't cover something. It doesn't, you know, tell us what else you're skipping. You know, you know what I mean? Like, there's all these, like, oh, I'm on top of the world because I know how to manage money. or finances.
And I know how to put table scraps in my mulch.
I know you're still living with your parents.
In my compost.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I know you're still living with your parents. Those have, I used to work at a part-time job at Barnes & Noble, right? The bookstore where they paid really horrible wages, right? And I would wonder how the people that made that their only job, either working full-time or part-time, how they did that. And because we'd be sitting there looking at each other in this basement locker room eating our peanut butter and jelly, and I was just like, how do you do that? You know, and we would talk, and I would get some information, and basically they lived with their parents. I mean, I'm talking about 30-year-olds, 35-year-olds, you know. They never did anything. Their lives were so shut down. Like, entertainment was out of the question. Going out to dinner, out of the question. You know, they just survived. And then, you know, one guy there, I remember, actually had the temerity to get married and have a child. And all he could do was, like, ask people for work. You know, I can't find any work. Can I beg the supervisors for extra hours, which they wouldn't give him. And I was just like, you know, and I'm already a Marxist and a socialist. I'm like, you know, I did talk politics there. I talked union, everything. Didn't go anywhere. But, anyway, back to Sharma, Sawant, boom, boom, boom. Sawant introduced the actual legislation for the proposal on Monday, creates an income tax of 2% on all incomes over $250,000 for an individual and $500,000 for a couple. For example, if a household has an income of $300,000, $50,000 of that would be taxed. The city would collect $750. That's not very... Sharma, all right. Well, better than nothing. Let's see. Sawant has taken to social media and held a town hall to build a momentum behind a movement which she calls Tax the Rich. Quote, quoting Sharma, for decades, poor and working class people in our state have paid far more of their income in taxes than the super rich. Very true. Now with Trump's billionaire-backed right-wing administration threatening massive tax breaks for corporations and super wealthy alongside vicious cuts to social programs for ordinary people, thousands are getting organized. We need to use this momentum by winning a tax on Seattle's rich this year, she wrote in a blog post. Then there's this thing about what opponents say. I'm not going to read that. They get enough airtime. Opponents.
They get routinely debunked on $15 an hour now when they object to that.
Yeah.
And it doesn't seem to cut that much ice with
you know,
like corporate TV doesn't say, hey, they lost that argument.
Opponents of this are not going to get a moment of airtime on Social Alternative Radio. Pooh. Spit. We spit on you, opponents of the tax, of this modest tax on the super rich. Do you know how much time we're going to give to your arguments? Zero. You already have Kiro here giving you lots of time. Kiro is a TV station, I guess, in Seattle. So chew on that for a while. I will talk for a second about legislative obstacles for the tax. It's illegal for cities by completely arbitrary legislation passed in the past to impose an income tax.
Democratic-controlled state, too.
So it will be challenged and likely reversed by the state. Yeah, there you go. If the council does get court approval, it can move forward with a progressive income tax. So there's still a lot of... they're going to basically put a barrier up to this. But the reason that Sharma is introducing it and we're introducing it is to obviously get the ball rolling, obviously get enough momentum and public pressure that they might have to think twice about invoking a law that's completely unfair and stupid, and it might just squeeze through like 15 did, basically. This is interesting. First of all, we have to give our legal ID. An hour of the show has gone by, believe it or not. Doesn't it go fast, Tom?
It does go fast.
We are WMFO Medford. That's WMFO in Medford. This is Socialist Alternative Radio on Tufts Freeform, commercial-free, community-based radio. And Socialist Alternative Radio, a little slice of that community-based, is talk and music from a working-class, democratic, socialist perspective. Your hosts today are myself, Jeff, and if I could say for your... Go ahead, actually.
Tom Rad.
And this is Social Alternative Radio on WMFO. You're listening to 91.5 FM, WMFO Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio, also known as Tufts Educational Radio. So we like all those names, and we are saying them partially for a legal identification. Now, this is something we wanted to start the show with, but I think Grenfell was a good way to start. This is from, like, I think the New York Times by someone named Sarah Leonard, June 16th. A lot of problems with this article, but let's see. Sarah is a senior editor at The Nation, community editor to Dissent, co-editor of Future Rewind, Radcliffe, and this is from the New York Times opinion section. Now, if you're familiar with The Nation and Dissent, these are liberal magazines. They're not really left-wing. They're not really socialist.
They flirt with.
And that,
they flirt
with. Yeah, they can talk.